to engage in a conversation with students and staff and faculty. My name is Matthew Lozier. I'm a biology instructor here, and I am currently a principal investigator on the National Science Foundation grant. So Senator Cantwell has been a leader in the passage of the CHIPS and Science Act, and this requires a major commitment to increasing STEM workforce, particularly the diversity of our STEM workforce for our country. And this can be achieved through a major increase in funding for the National Science Foundation education budget. And as an educational institution, YBC, we're a two-year college, and we have been serving this community for nearly 100 years, primarily through offering STEM courses. But I think in 2022, if you walk around, you'll see that there are many examples of innovation, creativity, and opportunity for our STEM students. Some of that opportunity has been developed through federal grant funding. So in 2016, we received nearly $4 million in STEM-related grants. And this was from the Department of Education and from the National Science Foundation. And in 2021, we received another $500,000 from the National Science Foundation. And all of these grants share a common theme of helping support students and STEM student success. Our goal is to grow new STEM professionals. And I think in this room, we're very fortunate because we have that next generation of STEM professionals with us. Some of them are here and some of them are in the audience. So at this point, we're going to move to a discussion. And my role here as a moderator is to provide some questions for each of you. And you'll have a few minutes to answer those questions. Senator Cantwell, I encourage you to ask follow-up questions or discuss any topic that resonates with you. So panelists, when I call on you, I encourage you to start with a little bit of what motivates you about STEM. So is it related to your goals? Is it related to the change that you want to see in yourself or in your community? Is it something like you just really love math and molecules and computer memory chips or something like that? Whatever it is that's motivating you, please do share that so we all get to hear a little bit about your motivations. So we can begin. Eddie, you will be our first panelist, and as president of STEM Club, you've had a lot of experience with STEM Club. I was wondering if you could share a little bit of a particular experience that you feel has affected your academics.
Can I just predicate it with a couple of things too,
yeah,
so that they can help us think about it?
Great.
Your intro was perfect, Dr. Lozier, thank you. So we just passed this big bill, the CHIPS and Science bill, and you probably heard about it, but you might not have heard about the science part.
Okay.
So it's not just about, you know, the CHIPS and helping reshore the manufacturing of semiconductors to the United States, but that was a really big part of it. Intel making announcements to build in Ohio and in our state, Southwest Washington, continuing to attract investment. It was also on the science side, how could we up our game as a country? How do we up our game on science? It's not like we've fallen behind, but other countries have been very aggressive, and we actually publish a lot of research, but we haven't translated a lot of that into actual commercial application. A lot of people around the world has basically read our research and then went and implemented it. So part of the bill was to how can we up our game of doing better science, translating it into real applications faster to help our country. So one big question in that debate was, well, we need more people in STEM. We need more students in STEM. We're not educating enough people in STEM. And one of the things that we realized is that you have to do this not at just four-year institutions, but at two-year institutions. Like, you have to grow that capacity. So here at Yakima, you guys have been one of the leading users of STEM education dollars through the National Science Foundation to actually increase the number of STEM students. But we need to put pedal to the metal. We need to do more. So we're here to ask you, well, one, to tell you about the program, because we've done three things. One, we tripled the amount of STEM money going to the National Science Foundation. So there's a lot more resources for Yakima to apply for Yakima Valley College to apply for. Second, within the what's called the new tech directorate, the Technology Innovation Partnership, there is $100 million there for fellowships and scholarships. So those are dollars that could just help on getting those who may not be able to afford even the two-year institution to get them access to the program. We really encourage Yakima Valley College to apply for that, for those dollars. You've been successful in the past, so I think you could be successful in the future. And third, there's a new provision in the bill when you're talking about how do you get our big institutions to innovate faster and how do we grow capacity all across the nation. Not every big tech innovation that's going to happen next is going to happen in San Francisco or Seattle. It's just not even affordable to do it there. So how do you build capacity for that to happen in other places like here in Yakima? Well, you have to use your institution as the backbone of that. So the new law says that if you are trying to become a tech center or tech hub, you have to partner, you can partner with institutions like Yakima Valley College to increase the diversity of those doing the R&D. So we're really trying to build up our R&D muscle. And that's what you guys, I've already seen your graphs and charts out there. So I already know you have that muscle. But I'm here to ask you today, what can we do to grow more of that faster? What would make it easier to grow that in the United States of America? Because this is what we need to do if we want to be competitive as a nation. So thank you. Sorry to take all that time, but I wanted to make that point that like you're already doing great things and we want you to use this bill. Yeah, something's happening there.
Please mute if you're listening.
But it sounds like somebody's on a treadmill. But this is like, we want to know how you've successfully done this here, and what else do you think would get more people, you know, involved? So anyway, thank you.
So with Senator Cantwell's comments, then Eddie, I recall you were a NEST scholar,
mm-hmm.
right? So there would be an example of talking about scholarship and how that affects your academics.
Yeah. So definitely I would say that the STEM Club was probably one of the greatest catalysts in my academic progress. I was exposed to so many different avenues. I was informed about scholarships, different opportunities that I would have never found out about or known that they were available to students. So the thing about our STEM club, I was also president 2 years ago in the online format where we didn't have this ability to have in-person contact and talk to people about these opportunities that are out there. My mission this year was to make those resources more available. Because the reason that that's something that really impacted me in a way, knowing that there were these internship opportunities, these research opportunities, I feel like that would really help a lot of people. And with the funding, that was also very helpful because in a way it was motivating me to keep going. A lot of us, we work outside of school, so that takes time. And for me, in order to continue through school, I would need to work my entire summer so that I could afford tuition and living costs throughout the year. With these scholarships, I was able to focus all of my time towards my studies, and it motivated me more to dedicate more time during the summer to do research. And again, with our STEM club, I would have never applied for this NEST scholarship if I hadn't been informed of it through the STEM club. And that's also a point to where it made it a little bit easier to apply as well, because I had certain attributes that a lot of people that maybe weren't in STEM club could mention. I participated in summer research. I've done multiple internships over the summers now because of that funding, because of not having to rely on my income over the summer. I think something that could help students is just an awareness of all the opportunities that there are nationwide. Through the last few years that I've been here, I've learned about several internships, several opportunities that are nationwide, even international opportunities. And prior to this, prior to being a part of STEM Club, I would have never thought that an opportunity like this was possible because of the cost of money. Cost of travel, cost of housing, and then, you know, during the summer, how am I gonna afford this next year that's coming? It's a great amount of time. So funding for these programs, I think, is very beneficial to the student, and it helps reinforce energy and time into your studies. For me specifically, a lot over the summer as well. Some valuable things that I took away from these research programs were learning that science is not easy. It's not easy. And that's actually a very misconception. People developing theories and laws, thinking that it's just doing experiments. But really, you have a lot of controlled parts of science that you don't realize until you actually do it. So going through, I thought that it was going to be a lot easier than it has been. But with these helping factors, I think it's made it a lot easier to progress and get to where I am. I'm looking into going into the medical field somewhere. So I've had the opportunity to work with the University of Washington through an internship program and do biological research over the summer as well.
Here in Yakima or somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here in Yakima. So I studied with one of the professors here, here at Yakima Valley College, and we did a study on ambient noise on communication between birds. So,
what'd you find out?
The results were hard. That is when I found out that science was hard.
Not an easy story.
Yeah. It took a lot into going in. That was my first research project. So it was learning a lot about having different standards, things that don't change, because if you have a lot of things that change, then you can't have a definitive result, which is a huge part of the design, the scientific design. Which I also learned a lot about in following research experiments. But all of this was made possible through the STEM Club for me, and I wouldn't have been exposed to it if it wasn't because of the STEM Club.
So when you first heard about the STEM Club, did you just hear about it from other students, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was kind of lost my first year of college. I didn't really know where to go or how to proceed with what I wanted to do. So then I was recommended to Christy, our academic advisor in STEM, and then she had mentioned STEM Club, so I went to the first STEM Club. And I remember the very first STEM Club was Matthew talking about COVID, the new virus that everybody was...
That time, in early 2020, maybe.
Yeah. And then unfortunately they had to stop because at that point we went to
Zoom.
Switched
to Zoom at that point.
Zoom.
Thank you, Eddie. Senator Cantwell's question about learning about STEM Club, Soma, if I could pose that to you, how did you learn about it and a little bit about your experience? I understand you've been invited to a national meeting.
Yes.
So tell us more.
Yes, so I was introduced to STEM Club through my advisor, Christy. Kind of the same thing as Eddie, went to a meeting of like, okay. Let's do this. But recently I was invited to a conference, it's called Abercrom, so it's for underrepresented minoritized scientists, and that will be this coming week in California, Anaheim. It'll be my first conference, so I'm excited to learn a little bit more about what I'm interested in and making those connections. Long-term goal is to become a physician assistant. So, like Eddie said, science is hard. So I'm hoping that's a step in the direction of becoming more comfortable in this environment. And without the STEM Club, I definitely would not feel that way. Just making connections with my advisors and peers has been like a weight off your shoulders. You know, you come and you're like, whoa, what is all of this? So that's how I was introduced to STEM, to go back to that. Brain's a little scattered.
Could you, when you talk about that sense of belonging, did your research project add to that sense of belonging, or what was your experience there?
Yes, it did. So I did undergrad research this summer with James Rivard, and we went over compost sampling methods And just going back, science is hard. So getting a foot into undergrad research and understanding that to understand science and to be immersed is going to be beneficial in the long run. And it really helped me understand that to do that.
And how you expected it?
Yeah. No, I did not. It was an ongoing research project. I appreciated that I was able to go out and visit WSU with my partner, with my professor, and understand this information as a whole, and to still know that it's still progressing, and it's something that I want to continue doing. And I think STEM club and being in these classes is going to, you know, push me in the right direction for that, with being included. And there, yeah, it was an experience. I'll say that.
Thanks, Thomas. Raj, I can make the connection here because WSU is one of our primary institutions that receives engineering students that you're teaching. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about engineering in the Yakima Valley, and I know you have some partnerships as well with some private industry, so maybe you could highlight some of that.
So the engineering program, when I came over, was a pretty small program, and we just had one room as a computer lab type of thing, saying that's the engineering thing. And the grant which Matthew brought up earlier, we could actually go ahead and remodify a new building called the Engineering and Physics Building, which is awesome, where we have a nice computer lab where we have the updated softwares, which most of the companies in town use. Plus, we also have a nice lab for the engineering students to hang out, design, more like a makerspace type of thing. That's my thought process, to have that. And we also have a couple of 3D printers where students can design and print it out type of scenario. So that's the engineering thing. We've grown the engineering well. One of the things we're also been working with is WSU UW. We have yearly meetings twice a year to find out any updates, any change in programs, any new admission requirements. So we bring that over to our engineering students here, which is an awesome. It's a conference called the Viserti Conference, and actually today we have the Viserti Conference at 2 o'clock today. So it's a wonderful thing where all the engineering faculties meet. From all the community colleges, plus universities in Washington, and that's a great forum for us as such, for the engineering faculty. And bringing in information to our students has been great too. They've been working pretty well. They do come over on visits. We do have each and every university coming over. Like, we have Central coming over on Monday to do a presentation of what programs they offer, what's requirement, and how you can transfer nicely or smoothly into their university. A couple of other things we are also, like I've been doing for numerous years, is trying to, how do we get more students into engineering? I mean, that's one of the things being Yakima. I mean, people think it's a difficult field, like Eddie and was talking. Yeah, science is difficult. Engineering is difficult. But is really, I mean, you just need to think about it. What in your life makes you a better thing, makes you a better person? Is engineering, is that the field you're looking at, or motivates you? So we've been trying to motivate young kids in elementary school. How do we do that? How do we get young kids motivated towards science? Not only engineering, just science. So we've been doing this thing called Engineering Day for Kids. We started way back in 2009. We always do it as a one-day thing. It's a four-hour window. We have a lot of hands-on activities, which is put on by the students. The students manage it with faculty, and that's been a great success. We started with 75 students way back in 2009, and by 2018, we landed up having almost 1,500 students, kids walk through. And that's when we said we need to make it a little bigger, and we got a lot more people on campus involved, and we're actually going to call it as a STEM Day for Kids, and we've actually planned, Christy's actually planned it for January 7th. So these are the things which you're trying to encourage students, saying, hey, science is interesting, this is what you learn, this is what it is, at a very young age, because you start at that young age when they go into high school, they know, okay, that's what I want to be, that's what I want to do in my life.
So what do you guys do that day?
So just hands-on activities, just very basic things, like for example, I couldn't even.
Well, I'm thinking about the slime.
The slime.
Issue.
I didn't want to talk
about
popular. Yeah, so that's a
not just
thing.
The average slime. This was scientific slime.
So we have a big a trough which is around 4 feet by 2 feet. We fill it up with 100 pounds of cornstarch and water.
Okay.
And then kids walk on it. So if you stop, you sink. But you walk fast, it's like a solid. So that's one of the main, one of the great attractions. It's a bit, it's a very messy one, but it's been a great attraction.
Where
for
is
kids.
The tank? On a platform or?
Yeah,
like
we created a sort of a tray
okay.
out of wood, out
okay.
of plywood. So it's around 16 feet long and 4 feet wide. And there's around 8 feet opening in the middle of cornstarch.
Yeah.
So 1,500, that's a lot of kids to
yes.
go through.
So we had some issues managed, but it went very well, and we could manage it, and that's why we got a lot more people involved. I mean, the students were great help, and not only students, we also had the local community. We had a handful of community, like Washington State Department of Transportation, the City of Yakima, Wildlife, they all brought equipments in, they had hands-on activities, which they got students involved. We also have a good connection, the engineering department has a good connection with the ASYBC, which is the American Society of Civil Engineers. So they bring their group in. So that's how we started. We started with the ASCE, which is the American Society of Civil Engineers and engineering department combined and hosted this initially. And now we moved in such a manner that YBC does that with their help.
Thanks, Raj. So to pick up on your theme of getting students excited about this, Kevin, I wanted to connect back to a conversation we had, I think it was last month. You were working, was it this past summer, ridiculous amount of hours and really long days, and you had more work offers than you could really accept. And you're here as a STEM student. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about that, the decisions that you've made that have brought you here and what motivates you in STEM?
Well, so for me, I come from a very secluded, very rural area. Like, it's right down the road, it's down in Titan, and it's mostly just agriculture. And I didn't have these opportunities and were given the opportunities in high school because it was kind of just some kids were selected to get the scholarships or internships and stuff like that, where everyone else would just kind of figure it out, you know? And so for me, that's why it was very tempting to just go work in the orchard or go work, shipping all these fruits down to Portland and stuff like that. So I remember I just had a conversation with my mom. I'm like, Dan's just gonna work at one of the orchard or warehouses here for a year. She was like, you shouldn't do that. That's a year wasted of your life. That is something that you can't be doing, and I'm not gonna let you do that. And then I said, okay. She says, go down to YBC, because two of my older brothers have gone here, but they didn't really graduate. They kind of, COVID hit, they both dropped out. One of them joined the Marines, and then one of them just kind of did his thing. So I was like, I have to do something to be different, because I have a little sister, and I want to set an example for her. So I came here to YBC not knowing what I was going to do. Just kind of, I had an idea, I like engineering, but I'm not really sure how it's going to go out for me. So it wasn't until last spring quarter, I knew I wanted to transfer out of here eventually. So I talked to Christy. I think she sent just an email out to the school, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna get in contact with Christy. And then I walk into her classroom or into her office, and she's telling me all these people who have done these internships in NASA, and they've gone to San Diego to do these things. And I'm like, this is amazing. I have these resources now, and I've never had this. So it kind of just the motivation I felt kind of just, butterflies, just I can do something now, and that's why I'm just so motivated to get out of here eventually, and do something better in life and set that example of that, and get rid of that stereotype where, because where I come from, I'm not gonna end up, working in a warehouse, I'm not gonna end up working in an orchard. I'm gonna do my own thing, and I'm gonna be successful. And that's kind of why I'm so grateful for this thing, for all these opportunities and all these scholarships that I can fill out and receive the money for.
Great, thanks, Kevin.
Do you wanna work at NASA?
I don't know. So since I, you know, did grow up in the Valley, I do want to go back to the fruit industry because, you know, I always had these questions about, oh, why are these trees, like, why are they growing in these shapes? And then, you know, a couple summers ago, I saw that that they bring in, like, these platforms on tractors where they have people stand on them and they hook them up to these things and they just pick apples and it's just so much faster. And it's like, everything is changing so rapidly and I'm like, and I'm seeing this and I want to be a part of that. And that's why industrial, kind of working with the systems, you know, that's what I want to get into.
Thank you.
That's a great segue. Let's jump to Holly then as ag instructor. So could you talk a little bit about technology and how IBC supports students in agricultural technology?
Sure, let's see. That wasn't the question you gave me.
Yeah. Run with what you'd like.
Okay. Well, I teach agricultural sciences here, including fruit science, plant science, soils. So, and all of these are sciences, you know, and a lot of times I think people get a misconception when they don't, they only know, you know, you see the people picking fruit. Is there any science in agriculture? There's a lot of science in agriculture, a lot of tech. So yeah, it's becoming increasingly high tech out there. The precision ag, we've got tractors that can drive themselves, and we have the platforms that they mentioned, you know, that's mechanical technology. And then we also have, on the production side, we have, we need to make crop plants that are going to be resistant to any changes that we might see with regards to the climate, the global warming. So, you know, are crop plants gonna be resistant to the changes that we're gonna see? So all of that takes technology and development of technology. It takes engineers sometimes to engineer make the technology, but it also takes scientists to test it. And so that's where I think I fit in. And I'm trying to encourage and to increase opportunities for my students to get involved in scientific inquiry or undergraduate research. So I've been involved in the last few summers with the STEM undergraduate research program. And it's been great. I've had two students just about every summer for the past 5 years. And what we do is we partner with research facilities in the community. Namely, we have been partnering with the USDA Agricultural Research Service facility in the Lower Yakima Valley. It's just a short 20 miles from here, southeast. And that's been beneficial for them, and it's kind of a two-way benefit, and so the students get to acquire these skills that they wouldn't otherwise have acquired if they were just in a classroom. So we get them out in the field, we get them into the lab, they acquire scientific inquiry skills, research skills, experimental design skills. They're going to be looking, techniques in laboratory. So, you know, they'll be acquiring laboratory skills. And I didn't allude to this, but they're also going to be out in the field. And, we're working with teams, they're working with other researchers. So that's the best way that they can get this kind of skill acquisition and also building knowledge. They're also working on their soft skills. They're working on networking. They're working on teamwork. And all of this comes together to help them as they go out to the workplace, you know, when they graduate. And, we all mentioned that YBC is a two-year, primarily a two-year program in college. But we just started a four-year program with agriculture, so they can get a Bachelor of Applied Science in agriculture here as well. So that gives us more opportunities with those same students to get them trained on some of these skills that they're going to need in a high-tech workplace.
I think WSU is very excited about the CHIPS and Science field because they're interested in what they call water AI. And they, you know, applying artificial intelligence to how to, you know, get the most out of our water resource. And since, you know, we know because we work on the Yakima Basin project how important that is to every community, but they want to get the best out of that science and then help the farmer maximize, particularly with the changing environment, what, you know, what we can best do. So I'm hearing a theme from everybody that the fact that you actually get to, the light bulb comes on when you get to do the science itself, but that's like you get the spark, the students get the spark and get to see that.
Yeah.
Is that right? You guys, like, you thought you might be interested and then you actually did some research and then you're like hooked.
Yeah. Is that right?
I
think to add to that, the spark is that sense of belonging here. And so like Kevin's comment, when you tell your story, Kevin, I feel like there was a moment there where you could have walked onto the grounds of YBC and felt like, this isn't for me, and walked away, but you walked into Christie's office and you're like, I belong here. And I just to tie back to your comments, Senator Campbell, about STEM education and National Science Foundation education dollars, the position that Christie has been in up until very recently was federally funded. It did not exist on this campus. And it has really changed how we approach student access to science opportunities. So Christie, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the things that you feel really make a difference for students.
I think I'm gonna start, I had a totally different approach. That's and great. As I'm listening to my students, I think I'm gonna go with more of why it's important to build up rapport with our students. I know that it's very easy to look at the academic side, but if we think about a student who comes in to me, and I will use pre-med as an example, and if you look at what it takes to be competitive for pre-med, it's volunteering, research, doctor-patient hours and being able to witness those interactions. It's the rigorous academics that go with that. I asked all of my students the first year, how long are you putting into your, my A students, how long are you putting in to your biology class and your chemistry classes? 4 to 5 hours a night, plus the time in classroom. So when you add that up, that's a 12-hour day, and to ask them to go work a job after that, to be able to afford to keep their cars, to come to school. A lot of my students are contributing to family budgets. A lot of my students think they can't do the summer research because they're not gonna be able to make money. A good example would be the Chapet program that Eddie was on, and I'm on their board of their steering committee. And they ask me what's needed, and it's always gonna be money because my students who are getting paid a few thousand dollars to work cherries for 4 weeks cannot turn down that money to participate in a program that pays you $600, even though it is one of the most incredible programs. The students get to actually shadow some of the top physicians in the country and get exposed to medical curriculum that they otherwise wouldn't be exposed to, and meet students that they create lifelong bonds with. But if I can't find ways to, they increased it a little this year, thank goodness, but if I can't find ways for those students to participate, it makes it very hard for them to be competitive in other ways. I've been reaching out to Ivy Leagues and that same thing and saying, what do I do for my students who want to go to Brown or want to go to Princeton or Harvard? What do we do? Because if they're picking up their sisters and brothers, they're working a second job, they're doing this, how are they going to have that volunteer service that you are absolutely requiring? A couple of them have now changed that, and it's, what are you doing after school? We just want to know how you're spending your time and make sure that it's, we believe that taking care of your family, taking care of your academics and working to support your family is important. So now they do have those opportunities to still show that. I piecemeal everything together for funding that I can so that we can be on campus, because I think once they connect to that campus and get to walk on, we'll say UW, right? It's a very impressive school. And they see the beautiful trees and they see these incredible classrooms and they meet with the faculty who are absolutely spectacular. it makes it more real, and then to be able to talk to somebody there and make a connection. So all of that comes with building rapport, because if Luis is going through something and he's too shy to say, this is not Luis's situation, I'm just gonna use you, Luis. If he's got a flat tire and he can't afford to take care of that, and he doesn't know there's funding out there, if he doesn't tell me that and he needs that little bit of money, I can go out and find him emergency funding. But if they don't want to share that with me because they're too embarrassed, or they don't want to have to tell their peers that, I can't help them and they drop out. But guess what? If they trust me and they come, and that's why it's so important to build up those relationships, and we have many people on campus who do that, I think that's where the money comes. You need to invest. If you want people to stay here, you've got to invest in the students, which is having somebody be there for them.
Yeah, you need the people support.
You do,
yes. Not necessarily part of the institutional culture or the history.
So how are you funding that?
I've had to be creative, so I do a lot of collaborative work with other student support places on campus, and this year we formed a group of three of us that get together and we go in on buses, we go in on certain things so that it's not taking up, instead of renting a bus that maybe I fill with 20 students, now we can fill it up with 50. And I'm still having to pay that bus fee, but I'm only paying a third of it. And so if you just think about it that way, now I have three more opportunities. LSAMP is a grant that we use, and I use that for certain things. I beg student government for money. I do everything I can to try and create those opportunities when possible.
Well, I think I'm pretty sure that some of this money could be used for that. I mean, I fought for a record amount of funding for STEM.
Thank you so much.
It's a record amount.
That's great.
And so besides the scholarship portion, it's just a lot of support for, you know, research, curriculum development, you know, the schools. So we should just see how this qualifies, but I'm pretty sure there's support. And you're such a great example of what capacity building looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like we're trying to, well, it's a laboratory in the sense that we're trying out a lot of things, and when we find things that work, we try to support them more. Mm-hmm. Having access to more funding would make a big difference. So I'm looking forward to that. Luis, can we turn this over to you? I understand you have an interest in technology and computer science, and you've worked with Christy. Can you tell us a bit about your interests?
Yeah, so computer science has always kind of interested me at a young age. Just kind of started out messing around with the computer, right? And then growing into like building my own computer at a younger age, and then taking coding classes here at YPC, which I think it's amazing to be able to create your own programs, debug and all that. And definitely joining STEM Club has been a big help in kind of motivating me more to stay on that path. Especially talking to Christy, definitely kind of opened my eyes to all the opportunities that there are here at YBC, like the internships, the base 11, it's a lot of help. It's been good. And I think kind of going back to getting more people into STEM at a young age, I think it's really important to like plant that seed in whenever we can. I think the engineering day is a great help for that. And for me, my interest in computers started at a very young age, so we can get other kids to have that same feeling towards STEM at that same time. That would be great.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Luis. Tying back to this theme of like having the spark of STEM, but also feeling like you're in a place that you belong. Giancarlo, you were telling a story at a meeting we had about a month ago of, I think it was meeting with Kevin, and being like, this guy's great, and I want to spend time with him, and I'm going to do it through STEM. So tell us a little bit about your interests and how your STEM experience at YBC has been.
Yeah, so the reason I'm in STEM was just out of pure chance. I got placed into a class with Kevin, and I mean, the reason I came to YBC in the first place, though, was because I knew I wanted to be an optometrist, and this was the closest thing to home, and it would be this, like, the safest. So I always had this like strict plan to become an optometrist and go here, go there, and just get it done. But my first class here, I was placed with Kevin, and we hit it off pretty quick, and he's like, hey, we should hang out. And that turned to, hey, you should check this cool club I'm in. And then I was met with just smiles everywhere. And my strict plan wasn't so strict anymore. It was like, I was faced with all these opportunities, like left and right. And it was shocking, because similar to Kevin, it's like, I had, you don't expect yourself to be met with all these opportunities, or like be in the same room as really cool people who have gone to internships with NASA or done really cool experiments and research where they get to do hands-on science and feel like they're actually progressing. And it's not just like the feeling of progression, but it's the feeling of, how do I put this? You feel included, and you made a lot of friends really easily. And every day I'm always looking forward to going into that room to see who's there and to just hanging out with you guys. And it makes me want to, seeing their achievements makes me want to achieve as well. And even though I wasn't the most interested in like science or technology at a young age, I've always been adamant about improving and learning as a whole. But seeing these guys, it's inspiring. I'm having fun in school now, which is something that, I don't know, it's not, most people don't really have fun. For me, at least in my family. you have tight deadlines, and you have all this thing on your mind, and again, you have all these like jobs to worry about, all these things to juggle, but it seems like knowing people who are in the same boat as you kind of makes it easier mentally. And it's just been a lot of fun. And it's cool knowing that pretty soon I'm going to be doing a research project, and I get to go out of Yakima, I get to do something that I'll actually put my skills to use, and that's exciting to me, to do something.
Awesome. Giancarlo, when you arrived at YBC, did you have other examples from before, from family or high school, of those pathways to research and to STEM careers?
Sort of. So my dad is a nurse, so he's always been an inspiration to me to go into something medical, and so I kind of am. I think eye doctor is a type of medicine. Actually, I don't know. It's a STEM related thing, so there was that precedent, I guess. And he was the first of his family to go to college. And so that's inspiring. He came from Mexico, having learned the whole new language while learning all these science terms. Like, wow, if he can do it, I can do something too. I want to follow in those footsteps, and I don't know, it's inspiring, that's what it is. But for STEM specifically, there wasn't really much interest until I joined the club. And that's when it really became the catalyst to all these different, opportunities, that's what I was looking for. Yes, that's what it really was.
Great. Thank you. So I'll turn it over to you, Sean, at this time. So your background is in analytical chemistry, which has a reputation of being a very expensive form of science. And you've also been involved as a research mentor for several summers. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the importance of technology at the college in supporting student access.
Yes. So, talk about the semiconductor. My background is I'm immigrated from Taiwan, so we have Taiwan semiconductor. And little touch this topic, I would want to compare the education system here and there. My personal experience is I feel like when I was in Taiwan, I was one of the good students, but I'm always scared of science. We are educated to do calculations, chemical formula on paper. We are good on paper, but we never touch any material. So although I'm a good student in science, but I don't like it. I'm not never excited like you are to science. But until I come into this country, I come into this school, and it's just take one quarter of chemistry class, it's totally changed my view to chemistry. I began loving it because I can start touch chemicals. I can start touch beakers, I can start doing the real chemical reactions. And it kind of make me bound into chemistry and feel like now I can do calculation and I know I can actually do something with my calculation and form a product. So during that time I was a student here, there's no STEM program. Right? Then I went to Central Washington University, studying biochemistry there. I always need to knock the professor's door, say, hey, can I join your research team? Let me have some experience in research. And finally, I can get into some group and doing some research. But coming back to teach here, I feel like the most important things I want to share with students is that, yeah, science is not scary, it's for everyone. And if you have more opportunity to use your tool, hands-on experience, you'll love it more. And the STEM research will give you critical thinking in a scientific method, almost train you as a small master degree thing. Like you are on your own, you can handle a project. You can set up an experience, you can collect data, you can analyze data, and then you can figure out what you can do from your conclusion, right? So other students at this age have this early exposure to the tools to and using the knowledge or makes it, I think it's a great thing. And it's really making this country different than some, I don't know, my personal experiences. I feel over there in Taiwan, I feel that the system is created to filter students. It's make it really difficult. And you have to pass one exam to the other. And finally, at the end, maybe in the university, they give you some kind of hands-on machines to start to do real work. I think that make major difference to the students that can early expose to all these, and then make them feel, believe they can do it. Yeah, and the science is for everyone. My organic chemistry background in here at YBC, we use these expensive machines so students can analyze in chemicals, organic chemicals from different samples. For instance, talking about the agricultural crops, we're using machines, we're using the methods to extract the chemical we want to look, and the same we can find more pesticides that would devalue the crop's value, right? But if we find the things benefit to our body, then we can increase the value of the crops. And the machine can analyze in those chemicals in the very low concentrations. And that's what I've been doing with my STEM students. Every year we're looking at different chemicals that practice this thought process and how do we approach to get the chemical we're interested in and look in their concentrations.
Thanks, Sean. Well, I think we'll go to the last word with Dr. Wilma Doolin. And I was hoping that, Wilma, you could take that 30,000 foot view of YBC and federal funding and some of the history of how it transforms an institution and creates opportunities for students.
Thank you, Senator Cantwell. It sounds like you did the absolute right thing that we needed for funding in STEM. We focused on the money for the students and the money for the institutions. It's yes. Both. Our students in our valley, as a Hispanic-serving institution, to qualify, we have to have at least 25% of our students are Latinx, 50% receive federal financial aid, and our institution has less than half the money to spend per student it's under the national average. So we have qualified since 2000 under that guideline when we just met the threshold. And at this point in time, I think we're 80% students receive need-based aid, and we're 65% Latinx, and another 5 or 6% other racial groups in the Valley, but predominantly Latinx. And the monies that we have received across that time, 2001, we had our first HUD grant that enables us to start on some facility development as an HSI. And then since 2002, we've had our first Title V grant, and then multiple STEM HSI grants and other things that have really helped us develop the facilities, which is one thing we heard about, how important it is to have facilities that have state-of-the-art equipment in them and things, because we can't develop the students for the employment opportunities or the other higher ed opportunities if we can't have access to the type of equipment that we need to help give them, put their hands on.
Yeah.
So it makes a huge difference for them then to be able to go on to another school if they have been able to actually have their hands on in their first 2 years instead of waiting till they're a junior or later, when a lot of the classes have cut them out if they go to a university. So the community colleges, and I think I can speak for most of them in the country, having finished my dissertation last year and did a lot of this work, but I know that having been here 34 years, that it has played a huge role in the college's facility development and the access to the equipment that students need. Raj was very modest when he said he had one room. He had one room where if he ran the equipment, it was so loud everybody was ticked off in a building where they were trying to do ITV in the next room. And so for him to be able to get a space that enables him to have students run equipment and in a way that he couldn't before is just a huge leap in his ability to educate. And I think that the money has been for that. The money has also really enabled us to do the things that are about student support. The role Christy plays, and we have some other STEM advisors and work, the role that plays in our ability to help our students and reach out to them. We've also had federal funding for Guided Pathways work, and we're working very much on making sure that students have access at any time to someone who can answer questions, facilitate financial aid, do all that kind of work. So you're spot on when your money goes both directions. It makes a huge difference. And for YVC, it's like $40 million over the last 20 some years that we have received in federal financial grants. The one thing I will say that is challenging about that is that a lot of the times you're asked to come up with something new all the time. So you can't like have ongoing funding for student research. So it's like, oh, we have to create it because it's a new grant. We have to create it as if it's something different, as opposed to having the ability to sustain something that we know really works, but is very expensive. And as an HSI, we don't have excess money that we can pay faculty and students in the summer like we do to do research. So that's a big challenge, is that you've got to create something new every time instead of proving that what you did worked and you want to do it bigger. So I think summing up what I heard people say, which is awesome because I'm always looking at that next grant and thinking, what did people tell us is important? It really is important to have this marriage between having the faculty have access to the state-of-the-art facilities so that they can teach. They also need to have opportunities for professional development to use that new equipment and do those things. And it's also extremely important for that sense of belonging, for the students to have places and people to support them in coming together and thinking about their future and where they're gonna go. So thank you for more money and opportunities. It makes a huge difference, and we are extremely responsible for that money. And what you see today has really, I think, been 20 years in the making, because when we started, We didn't have any kind of an advising program other than if students found somebody. We didn't have, our developmental education was, many students never got out of developmental education. And when they come from under-resourced high schools, which many of ours do, and only a few students sometimes get invited into the other opportunities, when our students come here, they haven't been convinced they could be STEM students. They haven't had the opportunities that help them. We provide that basis and foundation. And that's part of why a role like Christie's is so extremely important. And it took 20 years to convince this institution to invest in it in that way. And we'll have to continue to explain that investment with an ROI argument on how many more students we have and how much more successful they are and where they're going on. So.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense you have to.
The other thing that I would say, and I put in your ear, and I don't know how the funding is being put out, but one of the challenges in our service district is that it has been heavily agricultural forever, mm-hmm. and making the change for other kind of science and healthcare. Those two things. But making the case for trying to develop a future workforce is extremely important. Because many of our students want to stay here. They want to contribute. They want to come back. They want to change things. We need to be able to diversify as well the kind of science we're able to offer. That often means we're low census classes. And when you have to have 25 students to make it work and you can do 10 and kick butt and do an awesome program, there isn't the funding to offset what that costs us. And we.
What are you saying, Dr. Doolin?
So, to be able to offer some of these, pick computer science courses, for example. A lot of times to offer computer science courses, as an institution to run classes, we need to be somewhere around 25 students in a course to even break even.
Oh, I see.
Okay? And so when we're having to run classes with 10 students.
So you're saying create a tier in the program, create a tier.
I think if we could have funding that enabled us to, as it were, fill in the gap in the funding that we can't get because we're going to run low census program, or a program that requires a lot of low census so you can manage them, like our surgical tech program. You're limited to 12 students in that program. And that has a lot to do with the equipment and the safety and the other things involved. So the college has to make that up somewhere else all the time. And that really discourages the development of some of these other programs that could be developed here. We'd love to do, but we don't have that excess money. We don't have another way to get it.
Okay.
Well, we are towards the end of our discussion. Senator Campbell, would you like to make any closing comments before we wrap up on this part of our short tour?
I want to see the tour. This has been fabulous. I can't thank you enough. I really can't. This is inspiring from so many different ways. We have so many challenges as a nation to better focus on science and technology and get a workforce, and yet we're kind of lost as to how to do it cost effectively. And you could probably talk to any employer in the state today and they'd say, I need people, where can I get them? And so we know that just even an example of computer science, probably need for 300,000 computer scientists. So there's no way we're graduating that many. And so we are behind and we have to figure out ways to catch up. So you guys have really outlined some really great examples of cost-effective investments in the STEM club, in counselors, hands-on research, and in connecting and networking with opportunities, obviously the financial aspect of it as well, so that you can do the work. So a lot going on that's really right on the nose here, really the right approach. So very grateful for sharing all that with me, and thank you to the students for opening up about your lives. I love the fact that you can come here and walk on the cornstarch and like have that little experiment. We need the light bulb to go off in so many young people. I worked in a software company for 5 years, and trust me, when I got that job, I thought I'd be the last person to work in software. I kept saying my brother would wire his bedroom so that if I went in there, an alarm would go off. I was the first person to graduate in my family from college, and he never went to college. He works as a surveyor, but I kept thinking, he's the guy that should be working here, right? He's the guy that obviously had some proclivity, but just like I think maybe you were saying, Dr. Ferguson, that once you start working in a scientific field, and you see, even though my job wasn't really on the science side, more on the marketing side, you could see, you know, that a good system, a good systematic approach to a problem can solve practically any problem if you just keep with that. And that's a great skill to learn and understand. And so I definitely relate to what you all were saying, but I just can't emphasize enough. I hope you'll look at the details of the CHIPS and Science bill and see what funding you could maximize, both for the fact that we want to help Yakima Valley, but at the same time, I want you to tell us what we should be doing. Your examples today, particularly Dr. Doolin, what you're saying on the flexibility side for smaller institutions. But during this whole bill, which was a big fight, this went on for 2 years. I don't know how much you guys followed it, but it was a big fight, and I kept mentioning Walter Kalura. I don't know if you're familiar with this. This is Walter Kalura, but I kept telling everybody in the Senate, I said, we didn't even grow grapes, not really. I mean, we grew apples. But all of a sudden, Walter Kalura comes along and says, hey, I did this research, and guess what? We can grow grapes. And I said, now we have close to whatever it is, 1,000 wineries? I don't know how many. It's a lot of wineries.
1,000 plus wineries.
1,000 wineries. And what year was his research? 80s, mid-80s or something?
Earlier than that.
So here's a guy who basically just changed the face of agriculture in our state just because he did some research. Mm-hmm. We met another student who was at Clark Community College and then transferred after, you know, 2 years up to to Western. And he and a cohort of students got an NSF grant for electricity generation, but their solution was a window pane. They figured out how to get electricity from that window pane. And it ended up becoming a commercialized company. And I'm thinking, this is a guy at a community college that basically, well, the guy who first invented the semiconductor was a guy who went to school on the GI Bill, and the guy who now runs Intel went to a community college. The CEO, who's, you know, masterminding how we're going to catch up from the fact that we fell behind on U.S. manufacturing, basically went to school at a community college. So this is about access. Like, let's give people access and turn on the opportunity, and you guys will take care of the rest for us. And so you're showing me a really good example of how those funds can work. So it's giving me a lot to think about. I'm going back and talking to the National Science Foundation director about the language to implement the bill and making sure that we have this right. But I hope you'll, you know, apply for it. And I keep thinking about Tyson because I've met these people who they worked at Microsoft, but they must have done okay, because then they went and they bought farmland in Tioga and created a creamery. Created a creamery over there, and like they're making good money, right? You know, you're just there's so many opportunities, but one thing is going to hold us back as a nation, literally is going to hold us back, is the workforce. Like, we don't have the people. We don't have the people to even do the innovation. And when you think about it, so many people live outside the United States, like, they're going to keep growing and they're going to keep producing. So unless we produce more people in the science and STEM area, we as a nation aren't even going to be competitive if we don't produce that workforce that can think of these new ideas and generate these opportunities. So anyway, my hat's off to you. I love this whole infrastructure that you really have a lot of support. And you've shown a lot of really great examples of why this works. I mean, you might be one of the leading examples in the state. I mean, that's what it feels like to me. Yeah. I bet that makes the students happy. Yeah. Well, it's so hard. You go to some of these places and you talk about this, and that it just glosses over with the kids, right? The younger kids. So how do you get them interested? How do you get them interested? And then how do you get them stick with it?
you guys are telling me.
Thank you, Senator Cantwell.
Thank you.
So I'm hoping you would be open to a photo for this group.
Yes.
And folks, if you would